Welcome. This is our last episode of What's Your Problem? The Aussie Men's Health Podcast. I'm journalist Nikki Markovics, and in episodes 1 and 2, we talked about the mental and physical health of Aussie blokes. Finally, we're taking a look at what we've called social health, so the connections you have with your mates, also the importance of those relationships. I am chatting again with the very talented comedian Will Anderson, an AFL legend in the form of Brendan Favola, and Beyond Blue lead clinical advisor, Dr. Grant Blaschke. Grant, question for you from your clinical experience. Is there a correlation, or can you walk us through any correlation between loneliness or social isolation and depression and anxiety in men, or health concerns in men, or that connectedness? Can you take us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're very aware that there's a lot of loneliness out there. It's slightly ironic, isn't it? Because we've got all this electronic communication, social media. So you've got all these inverted comma friends. But when it really strikes home to me is when someone's got a serious illness and I'm like, oh, who should we call? What should we do? And I don't really know if I can get anyone to come pick me up, or maybe my sister. Like, you really get this sudden insight into there's not that many people that a lot of fellas can rely on.
Do you think there's also, Grant, a perception gap? Because I'm very guilty of this myself. I know that I have a range of friends that I could, yeah, answer that question with. If you said, who would call you? Who would drop everything right now and call you? Who would come and pick you up? Who would be there for you if you needed? I know that they're there, but whether I would actually reach out to them to get them to do that is a different thing.
I think it's a mixture of things. I mean, obviously yourself and perhaps me to that extent, you know, sort of extroverts, and we tend to reach out if we need to, and we have probably pretty broad networks, but there's a lot of people out there, introverts, terrified, you know, just doing their own thing and really quite isolated, you know, quite, what am I going to do today? And if anything happened to me, who would know? Like, they've really got no one in the world.
Do you think it's become easier for us to be introverted in that way? In that, you know, if somebody has their headphones on, you know, like you said, on the train, on the tram, you know, people are in their own world so often now that if you're someone who, you know, is isolated, that it is easier to move through life without people noticing that you're isolated.
I couldn't agree more. And it's really interesting because when we talk about, oh, well, how do we overcome that? And actually once you flag it and you say, oh, you know, it seemed like a bit lonely, a bit on your own. Yeah, I am. And then you say, well, what are you going to do? And the first thing I often say is, well, actually that small talk, a lot of which has dried up now because everyone's on headphones. But, you know, you go and you pay for something at the local shop and you have a little bit of a chat about the weather or the latest political thing. That sort of chit-chat sort of makes you feel connected to what's going on. More specifically, I might say, listen, why don't you think about volunteering? Because volunteering is a great opportunity. You might be at the school canteen or the footy club or something like that, and there's all that. Yes, there's helping out, but there's all those people and social around that as well. I think for guys in particular, developing a shared activity is really good, you know, like a hobby or a sport. So you've sort of got a reason to be together. And it's what we've been talking about, that sort of parallel chit-chat rather than like let's sit opposite each other and look into each other's eyes, that we're actually doing something. So I think there's a few things. Just one other example I'd like to give you. I had a patient, he was really lonely, ex-military guy, bit of sort of post-traumatic stress, pretty jumpy sort of fella. We managed to get him a little dog because he's, you know, he's renting and they wouldn't let him have a dog, but eventually got his dog, loves it, changed his life. You know, he's walking around the community the whole time. Everyone wants to chat to him because he's got this cute dog. And, you know, suddenly his whole world's opened up. So there's lots of things people can do.
I mean, the animal thing is absolutely an amazing one, isn't it? Because, you know, I've got dogs myself and I find sometimes that, like, if you're in one of those moods where you don't want to talk to everybody, you have to actually walk your dog when there's no one else around, because having a dog itself invites you into the world and for other people to pat your dog, have a conversation with you, to come up to you and talk about that. But you also get the companionship from the animal itself.
That's right. And so, you know, I think some of these simple things are really useful. Then if you want to go digital and get a little bit more organised, you know, there's an organisation called Meetup. They've got an app as well, and you can put in your interests. You know, you might want to learn a language or learn a sport or a card game or whatever, and you actually arrange to meet with people. So, I mean, there's obviously the tech stuff, even though it's closed some opportunities, it's probably opened some as well.
And Grant, in terms of men ageing, how important is that connection? I mean, I know traditionally there is that thing, isn't it, check on your neighbour, and I just watched a piece about it. A 90-year-old gentleman who still is the paperboy in the local community in, I think, northern New South Wales. He goes around, and because it gives him the connection, he's on his own, he's lost his partner. Does it become more important in a man's life to have, make sure, reinforce those relationships, or should it be from day dot right throughout?
Yeah, look, I think my observation is that the older men who are doing really well have some sort of sense of purpose, like, and they've usually got some sort of routine to their week. And so, you know, they're generally engaged with local clubs or local reasons to sort of catch up with people. So I think that sense of purpose is really important. And he sounds terrific, our 90-year-old paper delivering guy.
It's pretty cool.
It's something you've touched on a lot though, Grant, which is this idea of either, you know, an appointment, a reason, that being almost the door that opens up to have those even broader connections and broader conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, all the research tells us that too, that the more connections you have, you know, it's, you're physically better, you recover better when you have health problems. Unfortunately, we all do get old and have health problems. And so the more engaged and connected you are, the better for your mental health.
Well, with your experience, you know, you've been in the public eye for a long time. You've obviously done lots of touring, lots of, you know, you're in lots of instances where you're in front of a camera, in front of a microphone. But if you'd all look back over the time, have you had experiences of loneliness? How have you dealt with it? Or have you felt that isolation, and how have you dealt with it?
The main one is, I think, you know, I'm very lucky that in the community that I'm in is very social. You know, comedy in its very nature is a very social job. Even though you might spend a lot of time on the road by yourself, so much of what's built into my job is a social element of it. You know, often you're performing on lineups or at festivals, so you have an inbuilt, you know, a lot of my friends are from my industry in a way that perhaps other people might go to their job and then have a separate group of friends. Often I find that a lot of my friends are within, you know, the work that I do. So actually going to work feels like a social occasion, a social catch up. But of course, there is that same thing where often you can be on the road by yourself. Now, I'm a person who's pretty comfortable by myself. You know, it's not, loneliness is not necessarily something that is an issue in my life personally, but I can see how easy it is, particularly if you are a traveling person, because the first thing that you give up when you're an entertainer is, somebody said to me early on, and it was a really good piece of advice. They said, basically, entertainers work when other people play, they play when other people sleep, and they sleep when other people work, right? Yeah. That's your schedule, you know? And it's very true. So the first thing that starts to go is, you don't make it to your friend's birthday party because you're working on Saturday night. And then you don't make it to your friend's wedding because they didn't tell you 6 months in advance and that you had an appointment for that weekend because you're in a different state. And so what happens is that you can very easily drift away from your group of friends that aren't your work friends. Mm. And then when those work friends go off and have their families and their own lives, then suddenly you realize you've had a disconnection from your original life as well. So I think that when you are in a job where you work when other people socialize, that you have to make sure that you just don't have your entire life. You make sure that not your entire social network comes through your work, is what I would say.
Yeah, that is a really important point, Will. And I guess on those social networks too, for many, there are big differences between their male and their female connections and their friendships. I asked several gents in the community about that also. Here it is.
I don't know. I just find that if you want to have a conversation that can go anywhere, you're not going to get that with guys generally, not with my mates anyway. You're definitely going to get it with girls. Girls will take all topics and subjects and they'll take it to the nth degree and all that sort of stuff. But guys are like, you know, they'll be like, oh, I don't know, that's a bit much, mate. Let's have another beer. You know what I mean?
I would like some of my male friends to talk more, like, about stuff. And, like, they're the conversations I want to have with them. I don't want to just talk about footy all the time. Some guys don't have good female friends, but if they've only got male friends, then they're probably not going to be able to open up those conversations.
It's an interesting one because it's like, it's where you find those connections. So predominantly, you probably find a lot of them through sport. So through, you know, that common bond in playing a sport together. But outside of that, it's, you know, you'll have common friends that you've got with your partner, and it kind of, it's hard to kind of find that alone time. Or, you know, if you do find that alone time, you kind of, thank God we're away from the kids, like, let's enjoy the football and have a few beers and just, you know, not dive into something so deep. So it's kind of hard to find that time away from, you know, your day-to-day life to have those, you know, in-depth kind of conversations with your friends.
I think it has to do something to do with mindset, because I'd listen to my wife talk to her friends on the phone. God, they talk shit for like an hour. They don't stop, and they just tell everyone everything. I talk to my brother, hey, bro, how you going? Good, man. What's up? Nothing. See ya. Like, it's over within 2 minutes. I don't know how to express. It's my brother, but I don't know how to tell him things. I find it very hard to let him know about my personal stuff. I don't know why. It's just mentally how I am. It's so hard.
Do you think part of it, though, is that idea that you think you're the only one who's going through these things? So when you're at the, you know, you're in those thoughts yourself, and, you know, I think the more you talk about this, the more you realise that we've all had those moments. You talk about it in your footy career.
Yeah, but I could tell a stranger everything about my life, but everyone I know would know hardly anything that's going on in my personal life.
And so it's why? Weird. Why is that?
I don't know.
Do you think that they're going to judge you?
Maybe. You think that they don't think that you're the person you are. This is all the stuff I battle with. Like, I'm fine now. Like, I could talk to my brother and he's like, oh, you're weird. Because I'll be telling him stuff that he's like, I don't want to know about that, bro. Like, when I went and got the snip, you should have seen it. He's like, mate, I don't want to know about it. But I find it easy now. But I think this is a problem that young people have.
I think you're spot on. And it's so interesting because I'm sure there are different ways that men and women communicate. I mean, one of the reasons that we think, you know, why this rate is higher in men is that when a big crisis happens, say a guy has a split up or, you know, a divorce, which is one of the big risk factors, the girl, she'll often have friends who are around the next morning. I'm here for coffee.
Yeah, don't worry, I went through that. Yeah, they get everyone. I was left with nothing.
Well,
she had all the support.
Yeah. She got all the friends.
All
in
the friends in the divorce. But we're back together, so it's all fine.
Oh yeah, well that's good. But I think the point is though, it's true for the guys. As hard as we try, it might be. How you going, mate? Yeah, pretty good. Okay, good. All right. Well, I'll see you next Tuesday. We don't have that. You know, those sort of layers, the depth of that intimate.
But that's what it is. It's like, hey, Will, how you going? Yeah, good, man. Yeah. Well, he's good.
Mm. No. Yeah, and then we start talking about the footy.
Yeah, footy, that's it. Yeah. Just irrelevant things.
So how do we break that down, though, then? How do we get to a point where, because men like hanging out with other men. It's not like men aren't talking to other men, but we end up talking about the footy, or we talk about the cricket, or we talk about, you know, these sort of things instead of talking about our feelings or our emotions.
Grant, if I can just ask you as well, in terms of what both Fev and Will were just saying, I guess knowing guys maybe don't know how to talk about their feelings because it's not a practice thing for them. You know, it's the, hey, how you going? Yeah, I'm good, man. Okay, cool. Well, they just think he's good. There's a lot of physicality around, you know, the stereotypes with men, going to the gym, keeping fit, you know, there's this kind of the masculinity thing that's always there and ever present. So in terms of it, maybe the shift having to be around exercising your mental muscle or you know, your brain and getting to know how to talk about your feelings and emotions as almost the same way you would knowing how to bicep curl correctly or squat correctly or something like that. Can you share something with that?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's one easy recipe. And actually the way Australian guys communicate is quite fun and, you know, it is what it is. And we don't want people going, hello, how are you feeling today? They're going to go, oh, you must have been listening to my men's health podcast. You know, well, it's got to be real. Mm. But there's a few things we know about guys. So generally, guys are better if they're doing something else and you're sort of chatting side to side. So you might go for a drive and you're chatting, or you might be having a kick of the footy or going down the coast or something, rather than face-to-face, how are you? And you're sort of chatting in parallel seems to work a lot better with guys. The other thing is generally, and these generalisations aren't they, but we try and fix things. So as soon as your guy says, I've got a problem, he goes, yeah, I don't know what to do. What you should do is this, blah, blah, blah.
It's because we think we know it all.
So it's a bit of a discipline to like sit back and just go, and just listen, you know, just go, oh, okay, right, that sounds pretty hard. And anything else? Like just try and turn down the fix it reflex and listen a little bit. And that can be really helpful for guys.
Do you think it has something to do with the way you're brought up from like your parents, especially your dad? And especially for me, being around a footy club as a kid, Because if something hurt, you'd be toughen up, don't whinge about it. So you grow up with that mentality, oh, geez, it's not that bad. I just got to get over it and push on and not worry about what's going on. And then all those little things fester up, and that's maybe what can cause you to have problems later on in life. Because I know as a footy player, as soon as you whinge once, yeah, toughen up, you weak prick. Like this would be the coach back in like under 9s and 10s, so you just never whinged about anything.
Mm. Look, it's a real balance, isn't it? Because we like the courage and the strength of Australian culture and our footy players. And
Dad, stop being a sook.
You know, there's something I like about that too. So I guess it's about context, you know. So if you've got a friend who's having a hard time, pick the right moment. Might not be, it's probably not in front of other guys. You know, it might be just when you're together. And it doesn't mean that forever after then you have to sort of pour your emotions out to each other. But in that context, you can say, yeah, don't see him yourself, mate. It seemed like something's going on. Did you want to have a yarn about it?
It doesn't have to be all one thing or the other, does it?
No.
It doesn't suddenly have to be. We can have a balance of both those sort of things. And you can still have great fun with your mates. I love that idea of you're having these conversations around an activity.
Yeah.
Because that way it does genuinely take the pressure off. You know, you can, if you've gone, we're going to go and do this thing for 2 hours and somewhere in that 2 hours, you know, I'll ask him how he's going after the divorce or, you know, how he's going seeing the kids or, you know, whether he's...
10 beers in.
Yeah, well, now, fair, but I'm not sure we're meant to encourage the use of alcohol in these conversations.
We'll cut that out of the 2 hours.
But sometimes that's going to be part of it as well. Sometimes it is going to be at the pub or having a drink or these sort of things because... It's not like everybody's going to want to go for a walk or want to go for a drive. Sometimes, you know, even though, you know, alcohol it might not necessarily be the best thing, sometimes it is going to be the lubrication for those conversations too, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the alcohol's a really interesting one and we can't not talk about that on a men's health show. So the alcohol issue, it's true. You know, if you're pretty uptight about talking about your emotions and you've got those friends, I'm sure we both agree, you go out, they have a few drinks and they're unstoppable, the Watergate...
He's over there.
What did you look at me?
Yeah.
What did you look at me for?
And, you
fun,
know,
though. Heaps of fun.
He's giving himself a pretty good review there. Yeah.
You know, but we all know that. That's pretty common. But I guess the problem with the alcohol, it can get problematic, is if it's regular, if it becomes the only way you can talk about emotional stuff, you know, if it's starting to interfere with your relationships. And obviously there's a whole lot of physical and mental health sort of issues associated. Well, like I don't want to be the finger-wagging doctor because, you know. But I think it's a balance. And I think getting comfortable to just say, oh, it's okay to talk about something emotional without being blind drunk, that would be fine. That would be a great step.
And Grant, interestingly, just to add to the conversation with the alcohol, it was actually something that commonly came up. Like when I was talking to guys out there, they were just like, yep, I go to the pub with my dad, we'll sit, we'll watch the footy, but in that conversation, that's where they're able to connect and say, oh, hey, Dad, you know, you've just been, I don't know, he's lost his job, stopped working, whatever it is, that's actually kind of what helps marry their conversation together. But well, I can say,
like, if we have people over, which are my friends and my wife's friends, before we have a beer, like, they come over, it's chit-chat. It is. It's a small talk. As soon as a couple of beers, man, it's flowing. Everyone's saying stuff and you're talking about just fun stuff, not personal, but obviously it gets personal later on in the night if it goes that far. But I always find as soon as you get there, it is shit, like shit talk. You know that just annoying talk, how you going, mate? Yeah, good, mate. How's work? Yeah, good. Like that sort of chat. But when you sit down after a few beers, it gets into everything else like sport and family and kids. Why is that?
Well, look, I think...
it's not awkward. I've been friends with these people for 20 years.
Look, it's not new. I think if you look back historically at any societies, they've used alcohol and various drugs and things as social lubricants. So, look, I think it's all about balance and, you know, a little bit of drinking that, you know, sort of makes people relax is fine. But I guess...
It's like the guys have their guard up or something because I know the girls, they're straight into it. Bang. It's like they've just been hanging out for the last 3 hours. But yeah. The boys, they're like standoffish. I don't know. It's weird. But they're your best mates.
Guys, I just want to jump in there if I can. I did ask some men in the community about booze and what role alcohol plays in their lives and friendships. This is what they told us.
I would definitely agree that going out for a drink is something that a younger bloke would see as a band-aid fix. And I would not say that that's always the best solution, but certainly if a drink is what it takes to sit down and be a bit vulnerable and have an honest chat, then by all means do that. But do it in a place where there's not a distraction and you can be real with the person on the other side of the table or next to you at the bar.
I've talked to my dad about something in the past. We've gone to the pub and you sit facing the same direction. We're not very good at talking to each other in the eyes. So if you sit and you've got the TV on, the footies in the background, you can actually talk about it a lot more because it's a lot less pressure. So going to the pub is probably one way to do it, but whatever you're comfortable with, you can do it at the footy. You can do it anywhere.
It's very rare for me to be around my friends and then not to be alcohol.
Yeah, there's always blokey stuff, I guess. Barbecues, sport, drinking. No, with general mates, no, we don't ever discuss emotional stuff.
Grant, where's the balance, yeah? Like, it's very Australiana to be social, to have a beer, to have a drink and make that connection. So, I mean, obviously there's the dangers of over-reliance, but how do we meet or strike a balance?
It's really interesting, and they're so typical, those quotes of what we've been talking about and some of the ways that guys like to communicate. I particularly like the fella that goes with his dad and they sit next to each other and watch the footy and then they have a bit of a chat while they're having a beer. So
look each other in the eye. That resonated with me so much.
Yeah, what do you think, son?
Yeah, let's stand side by side like we're in ABBA. Yeah. And we'll talk, but we can't look each other in the eye.
So pretty typical. But a couple of serious things came through there. Look, the research tells us that anxiety conditions are really common in the community. Like in any one year, there's about 2 million people experiencing an anxiety condition. So it's not like everyday stress. This is something that's really impacting on their life. And we know that many of those people don't go to a doctor or a psychologist to try and get help. They'll try and self-manage it with alcohol. Quite interesting. I've noticed when I meet some of the old, like, serious alcoholics who'll come to a clinic, you get chatting to them. Oh, yeah, I was really anxious in my 20s. And it's really sad because we've got some great treatments, but they've actually, you know, gone down this track of that's how they're going to manage their anxiety. So I guess people listening might think, well, where's the balance, you know? I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with going for a few drinks with friends, and that's part of our culture, and if it helps you relax, that's fine. I think some warning signs might be, you know, if every time you go out you have to get really hammered, if you're having blackouts, if you've got other people telling you that you drink too much, they're probably right. You know, family members or friends, if you're getting aggressive, having any trouble with the law, these are all like little red flags that, hang on, this is getting out of control. So, you know, sense it within a sensible amount, no problem.
And also, as hard as it is when you are in those situations, but to not just think of that night, but to think of the next day. Because having been very close to people who have used alcohol, you know, it can be in that way to self-medicate. It can be very handy in, like you said, quelling the anxiety to the level that they can, you know, be social or open up or do these sort of things. But have an awareness that perhaps the next day you're going to suffer from the fact that the anxiety might come double because of the after effects of having the alcohol, those sort of things.
It's absolutely true. And there is a phenomena where people sort of get that hangover anxiety because the alcohol's worn off and, you know, they start going over it in their head and going, what did I do last night? Oh, gosh, I wonder if anyone put it on Insta. You know, that was a bit silly. Why did I do that? So that's quite a phenomena as well. So, you know, I think if people are aware of it and if they feel like it's getting out of hand and they think, gee, I've actually got real anxiety, you know, go and chat to your doctor, maybe get a mental health plan. There's some amazing techniques now to help people with social anxiety, for example, where you can learn how to sort of manage your thinking and gradually increase your comfort zone and even challenge yourself a bit. Say, oh, maybe I could go out one night to a party without alcohol, see how I go. You know, so there's definitely good help out there.
Well, you might be able to shed some light on this as well. Maybe, you know, you look at, say, as you said before, rock stars and this entertainer lifestyle where it's almost kind of glorified. That as well goes hand in hand. And I know on your podcast recently you spoke to Dan Sultan on this topic. Can you share some of that without, obviously we want people to listen to your podcast, but can you share some of that, how someone like that realises that, oh, actually maybe this isn't quite healthy or this isn't okay.
Well, I won't speak for Dan, but I'll speak for myself. Mm. People can listen to Dan's story because he had an incident where he, you know, decided that he had to stop drinking entirely and he, you know, spent an hour talking to me about all of that and people can listen to that. And I think if you feel like that's something that is a issue in your life, that would probably be a really good podcast to listen to. But I can speak to it from my point of view because the alcohol is so intrinsically part of the community in which I operate and so easily available. You know, there's not a lot of jobs. Like, you know, if your taxi driver or your train driver or your doctor was having a couple of beers while you were doing your consultation, people would start to ask some questions. But I can do my stage show every night and walk out with a couple of beers and do it, and nobody blinks, you know, like an eyelid in that situation, you know. So it can become part of the culture of what you do so easily. Often when you start out in the entertainment industry, the only way you get paid is in alcohol. You know, the free rider backstage is the way you get paid. It's part of the mythology of nighttime work. You know, your audience are out having a drink and the people who are doing that work are also out having a drink. And also you work in a community where it's permissible. You work in a community where if somebody has a few drinks or has that rock and roll lifestyle or stays up all night, you know, drinking, taking drugs, nobody's going to look at them and say, you know, you're behaving badly. You know, there is that mythology around it. So it makes it a lot harder to identify when that behaviour is becoming problematic.
And have you been aware of that a little more so now over the years of performing? If you do go on stage, say people who look up to you and idolise you and I guess being in the public eye, are you a bit more aware of it or you just kind of say, well, I'm me and whatnot?
Oh, no. I mean, I think that the thing that's come out of all of this is that if we're looking for black and white answers, then we have already put ourselves in a situation where we're not going to get the answers. You know, I think many of the mistakes we've made in all these areas over the time is like saying no alcohol is the solution, or you know, drinking heaps is the solution. No, what we've learned from this is everybody is different. For some people, having a couple of drinks is going to be a good thing. For some people, having more than that is going to be a bad thing. It can be for the same person. You know, often it's that point where you're going, well, I'm fine if I have this many drinks, but if I have two more, then I've put myself in a situation. Or 10 years ago, I could have six drinks and I'd be fine. But now if I have six drinks, it turns out that I don't react or, you know, pull up the same way as I used to. So you've just got to be conscious of, is this good for me now? Is the way I'm doing, is what I'm doing, is this good for me? What is the result of the process that I'm going through? If it's healthy, what is my relationship with alcohol like right now? Is alcohol benefiting my life? Is it allowing me to have a good time, to open up, to perform better? If yes, then it's probably fine. If no, then perhaps I have to address how much alcohol I'm having. What's my relationship with exercise? What's my relationship with my friends? Like, I think if you view it through the prism of, is this thing good for me or bad for me, then you can get a better idea than saying a black and white, you shouldn't drink or you should drink, you shouldn't take drugs or you, yeah. You know, I mean, I think when we think of things as prescriptive, one or the other, then almost the prescriptive itself can be problematic. Whereas if we think about something as, what's my relationship to food like? What's my relationship to sleep like? What's my relationship to other people like? And we view it through that prism, then we can actually make some change that might be healthy for us.
Yeah, I really agree with that approach. And I mean, as we've been hearing from you, you can hear there's a whole lot of things you're doing in your life which are helping you stay well, you know, without becoming a sort of a new age wellness warrior, you know, but just sensible things you're doing. You're walking, drink reasonable amount, do some exercise, making sure that you're looking after yourself, get enough sleep. It's interesting. I mean, they sound like sort of old advice, but a lot of these things are amazing for your health and amazing for your mental health.
Hey, I want to just bring it back to where we're at before with how male and female relationships compare. Will, is there a big or notable difference for you?
So work-wise, I work with a lot of women. So, I mean, you get to have that sort of, you know, open, in-depth, conversational relationship with women. In your personal life, it comes back to that one thing that, again, it's such a brilliant, simple piece of advice, but if you can shift your mindset from the idea of fixing to listening, it opens up your capacity to have relationships with women. Because it's the major communication breakdown between men and women is when a woman will open up to a man about something and the man will offer solutions, not understanding. Like the biggest trick you could ever say to a guy, if you don't understand how to talk to a woman, is just stop presenting solutions for things. She doesn't want actually a solution to it. She just wants you to listen to what she's saying, acknowledge that there is an issue, and let her, you know, work through it herself. She doesn't need the solution.
No.
Just every time you're thinking of how they can fix it, even if in your head you're like, this will actually fix the problem that you're having, just don't talk to her anymore. She's a bitch. Don't talk to her anymore. That'll solve it. She doesn't want that advice. And she doesn't want that right now. She just wants you to listen to the fact that she's a bitch.
He said it as well, didn't he? He was saying that it's this whole thing that women get on the phone, and I do it. You get on the phone and you almost repeat yourself over and over and over again, but you're just talking, and the girlfriend on the other side of the line is listening, or you know, over a glass of wine or whatever it is. She just listens to me endlessly ramble for an hour about whatever my problems are and so on and so forth. But the practical side of men, and I guess what they've been taught over time, Grant, you might weigh in on that as well, but they just kind of don't know how to do the listening part.
Just listen. Just shut up. Just every time a solution comes into your mind, shut up. Don't offer it. Keep it in your mind. No one wants to hear it. It is the greatest trick you will ever... Just listen some more. They don't want you to solve it. Just listen some more.
Very valuable advice, Grant.
If you've listened this far in the podcast, this is all that you need to take away from is listen. When the solution comes into your head, bite your tongue, nod your head and listen some more.
I love it. Look, it's a really interesting sort of philosophical debate, you know, the differences between the way men and women communicate, and you'll get people, you know, taking sides. Well, it's all nature and men and women are just different. And other people say, no, it's all nurture. It's socialized. It's how they're brought up. I don't know. I don't know how much is nature, how much is nurture. But there certainly seems to be quite distinct differences between the way women communicate and the way men communicate. I mean, I liked your example, Nikki, of the phone call. Like, I think if you added up all my phone calls for the whole year with my mates, the amount of time wouldn't account for a single phone call from my wife. I don't know what they talk about for like an hour, but it just goes on and on. So there's like a volume of communication issue. I think also there feels like there's an interpretation of or a complexity issue that goes on with women. Do you think he meant that when he said that to her, but she thought he said that? It's like playing with a chess master, you know, whereas we're just, most of the guys are just one move ahead. And generally our phone calls are sort of like, are you coming? Yes, I'll be there. Great. Okay. I'm being facetious, but it's of
no,
that.
But you're right.
It's about information.
What's, you know? What's the point of this transaction that we need to get done?
Yeah.
Has the point of this transaction been transacted?
Yeah, that's
therefore, we can move on from this, which is not the way that, and again, we're generalising because these are generalisations, of course, but I think that one more than any is that often also if you want to communicate, you know, with someone of the opposite sex, it is about, I found certainly in my, I'll just speak from my own personal experience, in my personal relationships, the idea that you're immediately like an agenda item going to be able to get to the point is a ridiculous thing to, you know, to take the time. Sometimes you're just going to have to sit there for a while and talk about other things until the actual thing that you're meant to be talking about is going to come up. Or sometimes it's going to come up and then you're going to have to talk about it over and over and over again. Well, that's how it feels to the, you know, sometimes to the male brain. You're like, but didn't we just talk about this and solve this? And they're like, no, you don't understand. Yeah. We're going to have to talk about this for the next hour.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, well, that's not you being right and them being wrong or vice versa. That's just a different style of communication. And that, you know, if you resign is the wrong word. If you accept that is the way that the communication, it can make it a lot easier.
Grant, as well, something I wanted to ask you, the importance of, I think you mentioned it before, the communication and how important that is. Like, I know I spoke to Gus Warland about this and he almost said, wouldn't it be amazing if we could take out a geography out of the curriculum and put in a communication class or something to do with speaking and learning how to.
We don't need geography anymore. We've got Google Maps.
I don't know why I chose that, but yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Like a geography.
Not Dr. Google, but Google Maps.
It's a really interesting notion. I mean, what we're seeing is that a lot of the kids, young people, you know, the early 20s, some of the guys coming out, maybe they've done a trade, maybe they've done uni, but, you know, getting jobs is really front and centre. It's really hard at the moment to get income, to get a foothold in the economy, you know, to be able to pay your rent, whatever. And I think what a lot of employers now are looking for is some of those more soft, what they call soft skills, but actually communication skills, sort of emotional intelligence about what's going on. So they want you to be able to do the job, but it seems that those sort of skills are going to be equally important, you know, for people's careers and for sort of the skills that they're learning.
And do you think it should be something that's maybe taught in school?
Well, I guess, you know, how sort of schools are approaching education is really important. Beyond Blue started a massive program throughout the schools in the country called BU, and it's actually this education program for the teachers. So more than 4,000 schools are doing it. But it's how the teachers are working with the young people, help them to build resilience. So within that, there's a lot more discussion about, you know, bullying and communication and mental health skills and all these skills that you really need for life.
And it echoes what you just said, Will, as well. Realistically, at the end of the day, everyone's different, and what works for one guy is not going to work for the other.
Can I swear on the podcast,
Absolutely.
Nikki?
Absolutely.
So if I had one message I would say to people is that everybody is fucked up. Like, you know, everyone is. But it really, like, I think the biggest problem that we have is that when you're going through something, you think that you are the only person. You feel like you've disappointed people, or you haven't lived up to what you're meant to be, or that you can't find your place in society, or you're not good at this, or you fail that, and you think you're the only one. I have never met anybody in my life, and, you know, I mean from the top to the bottom of society, anyone who hasn't fucked something up, who hasn't been in that position where they realise they've disappointed people, it will happen in your life. And I think the most important thing to remember is when you're feeling like that, that you are not the first person who's felt like that. You won't be the last person who's felt like that. And there are people out there who can help you, because every single person has felt like that at some stage. Please don't feel like you're the only person who is going through something like that, because every single person that I've ever known has gone through something like that.
Such a good message to get out there, because, you know, I think as we were talking earlier about, you know, these sort of false personas that people are seeing out there on social media of these glossy, perfect lives that everyone has. And you're absolutely right. I sit in general practice, everybody's got stuff going on, complexity, you know, that's just how it is. We've got this forum on our Beyond Blue website, which started as a side thing, and it's absolutely massive now. There's more than 1 million posts on it every year, because people want to hear other people's stories that really resonate with them, like their particular issues, you know. I'm sure there's a stream on there, you know. How do you manage when you're a comedian, or, you know, every little sort of niche sort of theme that you can think of. So I think the world we're getting into now is where people want to hear, how have other people in my situation coped?
I think we'll wrap it up there, guys. I want to extend a huge thank you to you all, our amazing panel. Again, Will Anderson, Brendan Favola and Dr. Grant Blaschke. Thanks for sharing your personal stories alongside several laughs. And thank you also to everyone who did listen to one or all of our podcasts. Again, if you're needing some help or someone you know is struggling, Lifeline is available 24 hours a day on 13 11 14. You can also reach Beyond Blue online or at 1300 224 636. If you happen to miss any of the earlier episodes and want to catch up, they're available right now on iTunes, or you can download them via the Hit and the Triple M apps.